time now on RTE Radio 1 for The Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show with me, Sinead Gleeson. We're on Twitter at BookshowRTE and on Facebook. On this evening's show, we'll talk about making the leap from book to film with Irish director Lenny Abramson.
A really good film adaptation is a kind of a complete transposition of one set of expressive possibilities into a very different creative language.
John Butler and Gráinne Humphreys join us to discuss some of the best Irish and international film adaptations. And we catch up with Martin Sixsmith to reflect on his book, The Lost Child of Philomena Lee, and its film version.
The constraints on the film are that you've got 90 minutes to tell the whole story, whereas in the book you've got 400 or 500 pages.
But first, it's been 75 years since Gone with the Wind first appeared in cinemas. It's the most famous book-to-screen adaptation ever, and Zoe Cummins takes a look at the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Margaret Mitchell and the 10-time Academy Award-winning film.
If I had to lie, steal, cheat or kill, as God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again.
That's unmistakably Scarlett O'Hara, everyone's favourite Southern belle. But things might have been very different for our daring heroine if Margaret Mitchell's original draft had remained intact. Dr. Neris Williams of UCD.
Originally, she was going to name Scarlett Pansy O'Hara, which hasn't got the same kind of exciting, erotic symbolism to it.
With her racier name, this spoiled yet determined planter's daughter captured the imagination of a nation.
It's still up there as the book that people cite most as their favourite book after the Bible in the States. It's sold something like 38 million copies, so this is a very popular book.
It was an instant hit and the film rights were snapped up for $50,000, considered a staggering amount in its day. Film producer and former director of film classification, John Kelleher.
Producer, famous old-style Hollywood producer David O. Selznick, launched this two-year search for 1,400 unknowns to play the part of Scarlett.
I'm in love with you, Ashley. I love you. I love you. I love you.
It was a complete con, really. Massive publicity. They got huge publicity. And they never really had any intention of casting a total unknown. In fact, they auditioned 31 really well-known actresses, including top stars, before they settled on Vivian Leigh, who was a wonderful and fantastic choice.
I'm not cornered. And you'll never corner me, Rhett Butler, or frighten me. You've lived in dirt so long you can't understand anything else. And you're jealous of something you can't understand. Good night.
The inception of the writing is an odd story in and of itself, that she actually was in an accident, a car accident, and she was recovering. And she was prompted by her second husband to start writing because she'd basically read everything that was in the library, the local library. So she begins this process of writing in 3 years and was not really expecting it to be published and had joked about, you know, I'll be happy if my family just read it.
A dozen screenwriters and three directors were involved in adapting the 1,037 pages.
But the original screenwriter, Sidney Howard, he had a huge task, and I think he did a brilliant job, but his first pass at it was a six-hour movie, which obviously wasn't on, although the movie itself ended up being nearly four.
Gone with the Wind won the Pulitzer Prize in 1937, but it has been criticised for its depictions of slavery.
You've got no sense of a context of a struggle for freedom. It's very much an idealisation of the South, which probably never existed. The idea of the plantation, the happy darkies singing in the fields. And it's a romanticised version of a pastoral idyll, I think.
You must be firm with inferiors, but you must be gentle with them, especially darkies.
Yes, Pa, I know.
Also the language, nigger, darky, it really does shake you when you read it from a 21st century perspective. I think that in terms of literary merit, this is actually a step backwards in terms of depictions of the South.
If the book doesn't stand up, surely the film does.
I think it's slightly formulaic in that it's probably too reverential to Margaret Mitchell's novel. They could have maybe broken new ground and made it more dramatic by cutting a lot more and going straight for some of the quintessential drama.
Margaret Mitchell only ever published one novel in her life, possibly due to all the publicity surrounding the movie. And when she died, she didn't want anyone to get hold of her work.
She burnt most of her manuscripts when she died. That was the instructions, was to burn the manuscripts. When she was 16, she'd written a draft novel about the South. She had short stories. All this kind of material vanished.
With all of its faults, Gone with the Wind still remains a favourite for filmgoers.
But I think its popularity comes from the fact that there was a need for nostalgia, a need for a page-turner, a need for accessibility of romance.
And of course, it has some great lines in it. And
perhaps the most famous line in cinematic history, which comes from Clark Gable playing Rhett Butler in answer to Vivian Leigh's Scarlet, where she says, "Where shall I go? What shall I do?"
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Thanks there to Zoe Cummins. The novel Gone with the Wind is available from libraries nationwide and, interestingly, has been borrowed in all forms 168 times in Dublin libraries over the last 12 months, which may seem surprisingly high, but given the length of the book, it's not surprising the book has also been renewed in libraries as many times over the last year. Now, Lenny Abramson's film What Richard Did was a very loose adaptation of Kevin Power's book Bad Day in Black Rock. Abramson is currently working on bringing Room, Emma Donoghue's story of a mother and her son, to the big screen. I caught up with him in Dublin's Irish Film Institute and asked him what he as a director has to see in a book to know it'll make a great film.
It's very easy to kind of mistake really good prose for... To believe that really good prose means that this is a book which will work on screen, because the one thing that isn't going to translate is the kind of the texture of the writing. But if there, for me, it's an atmospheric thing mixed with a certain kind of the pointing at something which I find captivating and which I find maybe elusive, and so that there's something left to be done by a film. In What Richard Did, there was in Kevin's book Bad Day in Black Rock, I suppose what we ended up doing was quite a loose adaptation of the novel. We changed a lot of things. We concentrated on a very specific kind of area that was marked out within the novel. And what struck me there was just the character of Richard, who kind of awoke in me memories of people I went to school with who were successful in a particular way. And I wondered what that experience was like. And that just started me thinking about that. And in Room, you do have an extraordinarily realised world, but one which is very difficult to translate, because Room works as a first person narrative where the boy's voice is so much part of what it is. In a film, you're not going to have that kind of perfection of point of view. So there is a real job of transposition. A really good film adaptation is a kind of a complete transposition of one set of expressive possibilities into a very different creative language.
We're here in the IFI, and I think you're in pre-production for Room for Emma Donoghue's book, a very anticipated adaptation, I would say. What was it about that book that you saw and went, I want to make a film of this?
Initially, it's funny, I read it, first of all, as a reader. It's sometimes very difficult as a filmmaker. It's very hard to just read stuff, because you're... that imperative to find material is active all the time. But I read it as a reader, and I was just incredibly moved by the book and by the character of the child and by the insights that Emma had into the parent-child relationship. I have young kids as well, and I thought she managed to capture both the extraordinarily positive dimensions of parenthood, but also the painful ones and the difficult ones and the battle of joy and claustrophobia that every parent kind of has to go through. We've heard about stories like these, and we've seen films and read material, fictional and documentary, about cases like this. But this is the first time, I think, somebody has used that context to talk about a much broader range of ideas about what it is to grow up, what it is to lose the illusions of childhood and move into the kind of more painful and starker realities of adulthood, but also what it is that's so extraordinary about the parent-child relationship. She's used this very grim context to explore all these other ideas, including many which are ultimately very redemptive and transformatory. So I just found the novel so extraordinary, I felt kind of compelled to try to get an opportunity to make it as a film.
How much input has Emma had into the script, or is it somebody else? Are you very much involved?
It's Emma's writing it, but I've been very involved. So she's been over here, and I've been backwards and forwards to where she lives in Canada several times, and we sit around a table and we hammer it out and we talk about it, and Emma does work, and then we look at it together. And
you mentioned that sense of claustrophobia in the book, and I was sort of thinking that if anybody made this into a different form, it would be a play, possibly, because of the fourth wall element. How do you think you'll be able to get across that sense of claustrophobia in a film? Because it's very contained within the book.
In a way, the room itself is, within the novel, is much more of a metaphor for that kind of claustrophobia, because within a novel, you can, you know, in a strange sense, there are no small or large spaces in literature. I mean, the words can range wherever they want. You're inside the child's head, so you can travel with him into whatever imaginative spaces he goes. In a funny way, I think that the difficulty in the film will be to not have that claustrophobia become completely literal, because you are going to be contained within a very small space, and you're going to film within a space that's the real size of, you know, the size that Emma has specified in the novel. And a lot of my thinking is in how to allow the metaphorical to still exist within the film without going into any sort of magic realist world. It just isn't my thing. I want it to be believable, but to have to somehow capture the poetics of the novel in a different way.
And thanks to Lenny Abramson, whose film Frank, starring Michael Fassbender in a big head, and Maggie Gyllenhaal, will be in cinemas in May. We also look forward to seeing Room in cinemas next year. Now, in studio with me now are novelist John Butler, also a writer and director of the new Irish film The Stag, and Gráinne Humphreys, director of the Dublin Jemison International Film Festival. Gráinne, a number of adaptations popped up at the festival this year, but do you think it damages a book if it isn't good, if, say, the film representation isn't up to the same standard?
I don't think so, actually. I think they exist in very, very different spheres. And I think actually what's happened is that a lot of the sort of devices and machinery around the film industry has sort of tried to kidnap, if you like, the integrity of a book for their own devices. So they will describe it in a certain way. I'm thinking about a book like The Notebook, or for instance, where they actually take that target audience and they try to drag them kicking and screaming into the cinema. I think the relationship's very, very, very interesting, in that you find that very few books, I think, are damaged by their films. But I think the other, it definitely does happen, where you actually find a film is constantly compared to the book, constantly compared to a book often a lot of people haven't read, which is a fascinating thing. You know, so people talk about something, The Hunger Games. I've never read The Hunger Games, but I feel like I have because I've seen the actual films. And I think the interesting thing is a lot of the time, it's a two-for-one thing. There's a great joke in a Whit Stillman film where he says, just read the cliff notes, then you actually get the novel and the critique for free. And I think that's sort of the same. I think a lot of people go to the cinema to watch an adaptation thinking, it'll save me 3 hours reading the actual book.
John, is the writing, though, is not lost in translation when you adapt something, or does it augment it in some way? Does it add something?
I think the job is to recapture the tone. So I think the writing itself might be lost, but the tone, certainly as a director, your job is to police the tone of a film and to make sure that it's consistent and that it works from start to finish. And I think that's the essence of what you want to capture, or what might have attracted you to the source material. So, you know, certainly the words on the page and the turns of phrase and the wonderful use of language that might have been part of the attraction to you will be lost, but the feeling that they generate is what you want to transpose.
Is there a sense, though, that there's a shortcut, that if you take something that's familiar to people, that they already know, that they know a book, that it's going to be easy, so that's maybe going to be a little bit lazy to adapt a book? And yet we heard Lenny say in that piece that it's an awful lot of work in adapting something.
Well, I think from a producer side of things, there's, as Gráinne mentioned, there's a pre-existing audience, and the idea of having a piece of property that you can option into film appeals to people who have to spend their money making the stuff. But I think that certainly at least as much work in an adaptation as there is in an original screenplay, because I think very often the process involves ripping it all apart and starting again and then trying to return to the point of origin with a screenplay that works. I mean, screenwriting is so technical, you know, and certain things need to happen at certain points. So I think there is a technical aspect there that requires you to rip things apart.
Gráinne, you were speaking to B.A. Bendele later in the programme about his adaptation of Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's book, Half a Yellow Sun. But did you see this year at the festival that there were a lot of adaptations, and are there more around generally? Is there a sense that maybe there's something safe on taking a punt?
I think there always has been. I mean, I think it's the way in which a lot of TV series are being, you know, sort of recreated, or that they're actually going back and remaking films like Robocop. I mean, I think what's terribly reductive about it is that sense that you know what the title is and therefore you know what the film is. And I think I mean, there's something like The Book Thief in the festival, for instance, sold out nearly instantaneously. But you could see that audience, for the most part, were coming just to see that film. They're not necessarily coming to see other films in the festival. They're just fans of the book who want to see it. And what's interesting about Beevy's film is that is actually the fact that there was a different audience came to that who wanted to sort of meet him and to hear about his, if you like, sort of voyage through the sort of adaptation process. Because I think that's what's interesting to me is where filmmakers find themselves in that. They're very rarely discussed. A lot of times adaptations are given to not very well-known directors sometimes, where they move deliberately away from the auteur or the big-name director, where it becomes all about the title and the fidelity to the actual
film. And
this
is B.A.'s first film, even though he's been a writer before, yeah.
But it's a really interesting thing. It's like it's a sort of like a safety catch, you know. And we were talking earlier about people like Martin Scorsese when they do films like, you know, Age of Innocence, for instance, that it changes the way in which they make films. They become quite reverential to the actual text. In that film, for instance, there's a lot of voiceover, which is probably something we wouldn't necessarily think about Martin Scorsese, although more recently with Wolf of Wall Street, maybe more and more. But it's very interesting to see how it changes a filmmaker's style to actually work with something that is nearly bigger than them in a way, and that they're very aware of they can't do too much, they can't radically change. I mean, some of my favourite adaptations are films like Don't Look Now, which comes from a very, you know, a short story effectively, a novella, and yet what Nicholas Roeg does to it is completely transforms it. So The Purist presumably would have had a row. But that's the film side of me being attracted to the filmmaker, if you like, to the sort of style of the film, rather than the knowing or having any relationship to the original source.
And Du Maurier worked very well. We've actually covered her on this programme talking about Don't Look Now and The Birds.
The Birds.
John, in terms of film adaptations of Irish work specifically, what has worked very well and stood out for you?
I suppose My Left Foot springs to mind, as does The Butcher Boy, as does The Commitments. Because they're all films that that worked well as films, almost to the extent that you might have been able to forget the source material and judge them on their own merits. And they were all successful. So that's important.
Before we ask Ronnie, I'll just take a clip from The Butcher Boy now.
Now, the thing about Mrs. Nugent is she came back from England with all these airs and graces and walked around as if she owned the town. But here's one little pig that's going to teach her different.
Ah, there you are, Mrs. Nugent. And Phil.
It's just every bag, please.
Of course, but that'll be a shilling.
A shilling?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
And half a Philip, so there's one shilling for you and sixpence for Philip. Altogether, 1 and 6. 1 and 6, please.
Heaven's sake, you don't have to pay money to go by here.
Sorry, Mrs. Nugent, but a tax is a tax. If you don't pay it, it's not going to be fair to everybody else, is it?
That was a clip there from The Butcher Boy. Grainne, what about you? You've selected quite a few. There's a lot of
standout
for you.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a list, actually. I mean, it's funny, actually. 1990 through up to, which is The Field, and December Bride, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful film that we just don't maybe talk about enough anymore. And I, again, just going back to that idea, had no idea that it was based on a novel by Sam Hannibal. The Quiet Man obviously goes in there. Excalibur, John Borman's film. The Dead in Angela's Ashes. The Informer, the John Ford film. Odd Man Out, great Carol Reed film. War of the Buttons.
That is quite... That is, I think,
I think that's some of them anyway. But it's a kind of interesting mixture of the sort of old... sort of films from the 30s and 40s, and then the ones that you actually remember from the 90s. And
it's still actually happening, because next month we'll see the release of the C. John Banville's book with starring Ciarán Hinds. My thanks to Grainne Humphreys and to John Butler and John Butler's film, which was released last week, The Stag, and is in cinemas now. And if any of you want to tell us some of your own favourite book to film adaptations, tweet us at Bookshow RTE. Now, B.A. Bandelli and Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's relationship is one that would be considered by any director to be ideal. One where you're given free rein. The film Half of a Yellow Sun and the 2006 novel are set over 10 years against the backdrop of the Nigerian Biafran War and was filmed in Nigeria. The director and writer of the screenplay, B.A. Bandelli, told me about his relationship with the author, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and his thoughts on adaptation.
I met Chimamanda for the first time in 2005, and I went to Lagos once. I went to Nigeria once to meet her, and we traveled, Chimamanda and I and her younger brother. We traveled by road from Lagos, which is in the southwest, to Nsukka, which is in the southeast. And during this road trip, we just talked, and I said ostensibly the trip was ostensibly to go to see where the story that I was about to direct was set, but in reality, the trip was really for me to convince Chimamanda to trust me to, you know, with this very important book. And I must have succeeded. I told her what I, you know, what I gave her a very clear idea of what I was planning to do with the book. And it's, you know, it's a tough to adapt a novel to film is quite it's a craft, you know, and I mean that in the humblest sense. What people sometimes forget is that a movie is closer in spirit, in shape to a short story than it is to a novel. In a novel, like Half of Yellowstone, which is about 500 pages long, you've got hundreds and hundreds of characters. You've got like lots of subplots, lots of themes, and if you wanted to adapt that and be literally faithful to the structure of the novel, then you have to do it as a TV series. Novels and TV series are like exactly the same, you know. So you could do it as a 24-part TV series and you're fine. If you want to turn a 500-page novel into a two-hour film, then you have to distill it to its essence. And that's what I did. And it can be a pretty brutal job sometimes. But if you do it right, you basically create a film which stands on its own and stands really, really well. So when I told Chimamanda what aspects of the book I was, how I was going to distill her book into a film, I saw her flinch. But she kind of looked at me and she said, you know, B, you know, I think you're as crazy as I am. You know, you're really as passionate about this film as I was about writing the book. So I'm just going to let you do your thing. And she did. She didn't even read the script. She didn't. She came to see the movie when we were in post-production. I remember that day because I couldn't really sleep the night before because I was really nervous. She was going to hate it, and she came in. She saw it. She phoned me. She absolutely loved it. This movie has been going to festivals all over the world, and I've sat down with Chimamanda 5 or 6 times now to watch it. So I know she does like it, which, you know, is a big relief.
B.A. Bandelli's Half of a Yellow Sun is released here on April 11th, and the novel, if you haven't read it, is published by Harper Perennial. Finally this evening, The Lost Child of Philomena Lee by Martin Sixsmith was recently made into a film starring Steve Coogan. Philomena is an adaptation, but with some significant plot changes. I asked Martin Sixsmith when he knew that Philomena would become a book rather than a series of articles.
I always knew from the beginning that it was either going to be just an investigation that I did and it wouldn't produce anything, or it was going to be a book. And whether it was going to be a book depended on what we found in the course of the investigation. So we could have found out that her son, Anthony, had not done anything with his life. He'd just been completely unremarkable. But the stroke of good fortune was that we found out that he'd become a public figure in the United States, and that made the story doubly interesting. It gave it at least 2 layers, and that was really why it turned into a book.
It's fun, isn't it? All the pieces of paper designed to help you find him have been destroyed. But guess what? The one piece of paper designed to stop you finding him has been lovingly preserved. God, in his infinite wisdom, decided to spare that from the flames.
I signed it because I believed I committed a terrible sin and had to be punished.
Well, I'd been a journalist for a long time, so I'd been doing factual reporting. So the first thing to do was the research. And, you know, I sat down with her and spoke to her for a long time and recorded all the interviews and then went off and looked at the sources and looked at the background of her story. But she was clearly going to be at the centre of it, so she was going to be the main character, and in a way it was quite easy because she in real life is a bit of a larger than life character. She's a very chatty, lovely, warm, open, emotionally aware Irish woman, so in a sense to an author that was a bit of a gift.
So from the real-life Philomena to the book and then onto the film, how well do you think her personality has actually been preserved in the film?
Well, with all these things, there are several iterations, and you start with real life. And, you know, I could have written just a straightforward documentary account of what had happened to Philomena. And in a sense, that was the journalism I'd always done. But for this, I wanted to do something a little different. So the book was written in the style that Truman Capote called a factual novel. So the facts are there, but it's written with invented scenes, descriptions and dialogue. But I think it preserves the essential truth of the story. Then for the film, you're moving one further step away, so it's a sort of second iteration. And the film dramatises even more than the book does. And the constraints on the film are that you've got 90 minutes to tell the whole story, whereas in the book you've got 400 or 500 pages. So it had to be selective. It selected one of the two story strands, which was Philomena's story. It introduced Martin as a character, and it exaggerated, I would say, the character traits of both Martin and Philomena in order to create this dramatic arc which sees them both develop over the course of the film, and they both learn from each other.
How much did Steve Coogan and Jeff Pope consult with you when they were writing the script, and how well do you think it turned out? Were you happy with the result?
Well, they were very good. They consulted with me at every stage, and I saw all the various drafts that they were going through, so none of it was a surprise. I have to say, though, that they did, I think, make the Martin character a little bit more of a prat than I am in real life. And they also gave him this sort of impassioned anger against the Irish Catholic Church, which I certainly don't have. I'm English and, you know, I'm not even a Catholic, so I see it from the outside in a sort of more objective way. But Steve Coogan is both a Catholic and of Irish extraction. So he had this sort of great inner feeling about what the Catholic Church had done. And that's why the Martin character in the film is very angry. That's why he shouts at the nuns. And he, I think, expresses the feelings of anger, which a lot of people share. But I don't have that. I'm, you know, my journalism is always much more BBC, you know, on the one hand this, on the other hand that, and let's try and reach an objective conclusion.
Thanks to Martin Sixsmith, The Lost Child of Philomena Lee is published by Macmillan, and Philomena the film is still in certain cinemas nationwide. Thanks for tuning into The Book Show. It was produced by Zoe Cummins and is available to listen back on rte.ie, on iTunes and on SoundCloud. We leave you this evening with the formula on how to turn a book into a film with Regan Hutchins and this footnote.
So here's how to bring the page to the silver screen. 1. Stick with Shakespeare. So far, over 800 directors have, making him the most adapted author for the screen. 2. Change the ending. Make it happy. It worked for Breakfast at Tiffany's. Everyone except Truman Capote thought so at the time. 3. Get a trilogy out of it. The Hobbit is a tiny book, yet will cover 3 films. The first one saw Bilbo Baggins get off his armchair to stoke the fire, so keep them keen. 4. Choose your author carefully. Maybe avoid Stephen King. He's still being mean about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining after all these years. 5. Write the book yourself. In 1979, Michael Crichton directed the first great train robbery, based on a book by Michael Crichton. 6. Don't try to please the bibliophiles. You know they'll always prefer the book.
The Book Show was presented by Sinead Gleeson.